Voice of America's Studio 7 brings you an exclusive interview with the Prime Minister of Zimbabwe, Morgan Tsvangirai, who was in North Carolina in the USA to attend the three-day Democratic National Convention that ended on Thursday. I am Violet Gonda. In this wide-ranging interview, I started by asking Mr. Tsvangirai to talk about his trip.
I was invited to participate in the National Democratic Convention as part of the International Leadership Forum organized by NDI. So I'm part of the over 300 international leaders of various levels of government who are participating in this convention.
I understand that you're the highest ranking African leader to be invited by the Democratic Party to attend this convention.
It's true, and I'm humbled by it. I'm humbled the fact that I have that recognition. But I don't think that it's something that is significant. I'm sure that in any of their conventions, they do identify which leader to come and grace their occasion.
So what lessons are you learning from the U.S. process?
It's both process and substance. Process-wise, I think that there is a lot that we can learn. You know, democracy is not an event. These are institutional developments that have been here for the last 200 years. So our democratic development is a baby. So there is a lot that we can learn in terms of process. How do we ensure that people are participating? How do we formulate policy? How do we increase debates? Because really it's about issues. It's not about individuals. So on substance, I think one of the things that you tend to observe is the extent of ideological and policy difference between the two major parties in the United States and the way people try to convince the rest of the population to support them.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read the newspapers or what's being said about your visit to America in the state-controlled media. For example, ZANU-PF party has said that you abandoned a critical principles meeting to attend this convention, and that presidential spokesman George Haramba says that this is a clear example that shows you favor foreign interests ahead of national issues. What can you say about this?
Well, I don't like to be personal to George. George has always chosen. He has chosen to be a personal, to make my role in the country personal, and to portray an image which has nothing to do with my objective in government, my objective in the politics of the country. Firstly, the question of abandoning. Well, if the same accusation were to apply, President Mugabe left for the non-aligned movement a week ago when the draft constitution was out and did not even explain when we were going to meet. Because I told him I was away for a week, he was going to be away for a week. So who has abandoned what? And as far as the second part about serving foreign interests, it will be in the same equal measure that President Mugabe, in attending non-aligned movement, is he serving foreign interests? Let's abandon that. We are all patriots. We are all trying to do our best under very difficult circumstances to push our country forward. In spite of the frustrating experiences, the lack of implementation of the GPA, the lack of implementation of those reforms that are necessary, and the intransigence on the part of ZANU-PF to reverse a constitutional process that they have endorsed.
Considering that the U.S. is in an election mode, some say this is showing allegiance and you should have stayed away because this would potentially affect relations if the Republicans were to win, for example. What's your comment to this?
That's totally out. I did not come here to endorse the Democratic Party. I did not come here to endorse the Republican Party. I came here to an international forum as invited as to experience the American political system at a convention. I have not been given a platform where I've said I'm endorsing the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. We work with both.
How do you respond to critics who say you have managed to build some credibility by focusing your advocacy in Africa, but that by you coming to the U.S., you are now providing ammunition to propagandists who would say this is evidence of you being a puppet of the West, like what is being said by Mr. Charamba?
To be honest, I've long since taken a position that what George says does not change the direction and the destiny of the country either way. It's his personal view. He can shout and do whatever he wants. I will not even give him a moment of thought. The position is this. We as MDC, would like to engage the international community. And the international community includes, first and foremost, Africa, Europe, America, Eastern Europe, Chinese, everyone. And I've demonstrated over the last year the diplomatic inroads we have made, even some of the people who thought that we were enemies, we have engaged them. The idea is that Zimbabwe is not an island, and that what we are attempting to do is that Zimbabwe should be part of the family of nations. What we are trying to do is to promote the best interests of Zimbabwe. And if anyone would come and say that you are undermining the best interests of Zimbabwe, perhaps that would be a basis of argument. But the real basis is that Zimbabwe needs to be part of the family of nations. And that's my objective.
You will still have others who are saying there's too much globetrotting by government leaders, and that some would say, couldn't you send your deputies, for example, especially as they are pressing matters back home, such as the constitution crisis?
There is no constitutional crisis. There is a constitutional impasse, which is not the creation of the MDC. Well, every mission has got an appropriate level of delegation. I don't go to every opportunity that arises. I go strategically to engage at the level that I think is going to be in the long-term interest of the country. As for a crisis like the Constitution, it will be resolved one way or the other.
Let's talk about this stalemate on the Constitution-making process. Do you honestly think President Zuma's mediation will work, considering he's only a facilitator?
At the end of the day, if three parties agree and they've endorsed a certain position and they've signed to a certain position, why should the whole country be held ransom by one party? And I don't think that it's fair. It's acting in bad faith. It's acting in the partisan interest and not in the national interest. Above all, a constitution is a national document of governance. And as far as I'm concerned, if there is consensus amongst the main actors, that should be the basis of moving forward.
Many people believe that ZANU-PF will not yield to settling, you know, with the final draft. So what are the possible scenarios here?
Well, the possible scenario is that, but of course you have to take into consideration that SADC will not allow a stalemate. SADC will find a way of resolving this impasse. But above all, it would have been better for Zimbabweans to find common cause, which we thought we had arrived at when we signed the document after very painstaking 3.5 years of work and after so much resources put in this exercise.
Your party has said you will not dialogue anymore on the final draft, and you have stated your position. So what other options are there besides waiting for SADC or external countries?
Well, we have not met as principals. We want to hear what justification President Mugabe has for his party to go and overhaul the whole constitutional process that he has signed to. And until such time that he's clear about it and we have made our position clear, one cannot talk of an end. I'm sure that down the line, the constitution will go to the people. They are the final arbiter on the constitution. They are the ones that made the input and they are the ones who will have the final say.
Are you in a catch-22 situation here? Because doesn't the GPA say that in the event that you fail to agree on anything, either party can call an election?
No, there is no such thing. I mean, you have read our GPA very wrongly. Mm-hmm. There is no clause like that. There is no clause, first of all, on any party to exercise veto power. And secondly, there is no clause in the GPA which allows a party to take unilateral action against the other party. So no party has got the right to call an election. No party has got the right single-handedly to determine anything. That's why the principals have to meet and decide what is the next step. If that was the case, then the whole constitutional edifice upon which this GPA was built will then collapse.
You say the principals have to meet and decide on the next step, but you've been meeting for a very long time, and it seems that there is no solution to this problem. Surely,
that's why even the disagreements that are, the implementation deficits that are there, we have noted them. We brought them to the attention of SADC. SADC is instead that we need full implementation. Obviously, there is no way that anyone can have a leverage to force a political party to do 1, 2, 3 things. But as long as we are part of the GPA, we are bound by the 19th Amendment of the Constitution, which is the basis upon which this GPA is built. So the government has to be managed.
Yes, but how, Prime Minister? Surely your own party should have a position on this. What is your party's position?
I mean, our position is that if there is a consensus to disagree, we'll disagree. And then we'll advise SADC to say, what are the next steps? If it means that we need now to go to say, let's go to an election, then the conditions for elections will now be the next subject of discussion. But at the moment, we are not talking about election. We are talking about constitutional process. And until that deadlock is arrived at, I cannot talk of a further step beyond the current constitutional debate.
Yes, but the emails that we're getting, the responses that we're getting from our listeners is that people are fed up with this long negotiation.
Well, they have to be patient. They will have to be patient. Rome was not built in a day. Remember the position where we are coming from, the acrimony, the polarization. And I think that the transition has helped to break down those barriers of suspicion in terms of what are the national interests and pushing forward those things. I am quite conscious of the fact that people want to go to the election, and we will go to an election. If that is what it takes for the final resolution of the Zimbabwean crisis, so let it be. But it cannot be just a thumb-sucking exercise.
So will you go to elections without reforms?
No, you can't. We are saying there are steps and benchmarks that need to be put in place before that election is conducted, or else we'll reproduce 2008.
At the end of the day, isn't it a fact that reforms are not the problem here, and that reforms will only remain on paper and not implemented, even if you reforms?
We have implemented some of them. They are not all. We have agreed on the Electoral Act. We have agreed on the Human Rights Act. We have put in commissions. That's all part of the reform that are comprehensively going to help create an environment for free and fair elections.
Isn't there an assumption that our problems in Zimbabwe are about policies and strengthening institutions and reforms? But isn't it more about our political culture, that as long as there is no shift in political culture, nothing will change?
Well, the transition was intended to achieve that. The transition was intended to soft land the crisis so that we have a different political culture. Now, having said that, have we achieved a totally different political culture? Certainly, it is a process that's going to take time, but at least we have set ourselves on a direction in which the democratic credentials of the country will be the basis upon which the future political interaction will be set.
Let's talk about the Freedom House survey. It indicated that public trust in your office, in the Prime Minister's office, has considerably gone down. What is your reaction to this?
Well, I cannot discuss the validity or otherwise of the survey and make it a subject of discussion. I take note of the observations that I've made, but also I take note of some of the gaps in the survey. Like, for instance, how do you say that the Zimbabwe now listens to the ZBC more than any other source? How do you say that the Herald is now the most popular newspaper when we know the truth? So all I can say is that, yes, we take note of some of the observations. If there are any validity, then it's up to the MDC to take into consideration and take the corrective measures. We are not dismissing any survey that is carried by anyone. But the real survey, Violet, is the people themselves when they go to a vote. You should not be scared about a sample. You should be scared about the outcome of the real national vote. That's where it counts.
But on this survey, if this is what people are saying, has there been a reflection in your party to see what the cause is? Because
no,
it seems like people are...
If people just say, your support has declined without giving reasons, which area, why, and how... We of course, as a party, from time to time, we reflect on these issues. Where is our weaknesses? We always take a strategic review of our situation. We don't do it because there is a survey. We do it as a regular assessment of the performance of the party outside government, of the performance of the party in government, in local authorities. All these matters are matters that we regularly check. And especially after the survey, we have to say, how far true is it? We have to self-introspect and correct it.
You say they didn't give any examples, but actually there are quite a few examples that were in this report, including widespread corruption by some of your officials as some of the issues that people had problems with.
But who is not corrupt? Corrupt is something that has been said by ZANU-PF, and they have not done anything to arrest corruption. We have done something. We are doing something. We have gone in to fire a whole city council in Chitungwiza. We have done an assessment of all our local authorities because we know our people are telling us that these issues need to be addressed. So we do an evaluation of delivery in local authorities, and what we have done is to deal with those that have been identified as corrupt. The issue is not that there will be no corruption. Even in the United States, even anywhere in the world, there will be corruption. But what you need is, what are you doing about it? That's the real issue.
So would you consider leading your party to a lifestyle audit where individuals holding public offices are actually assessed in terms of what they earn and the lifestyle that they're living? The other day I interviewed your secretary for local government, Cecil Jedzai, and he gave an example of the mayor of Gweru who you fired recently. And Mr. Rezai gave an example saying that a person who was like a street kid just the other day is now a mayor and has several cars, fancy houses. And
that's why we dealt with that.
So this is what I'm saying, that as Prime Minister, are you willing to lead an audit to see who has what?
We are willing to evaluate the performance of our ministers, everyone, to ensure that we stay within the principles of the party. But we are not going to be on a witch hunt, because a witch hunt sometimes goes into subjective areas. But as I said, the issue is that where we have evaluated and we find that somebody is acting not in the best interest of the values and the principles of the party, we'll deal with that.
Well, you mentioned witch hunt, and it seems that some of the people that have been fired by the party are saying exactly that this is what has happened,
no,
and that
not.
They were never called to a disciplinary hearing, that they were not consulted.
It's not a question of a disciplinary hearing. Mm-hmm. We do have our own internal measures. You can't have a disciplinary hearing in the face of evidence which is overwhelming. You wait until you have a disciplinary hearing to establish what? When the facts have not been properly established. And the men and the women themselves have admitted to that indiscretion. What disciplinary hearing, except to make it just a bureaucratic delay? We need action, and we need to send a clear message that the party will not tolerate that.
Another issue that has come up is the quality of some of your public officials. And as I mentioned, one of your deputy ministers described one of the people that was fired as someone who was a street kid before he became a councillor. So what does that say, though?
Look. We are a young party. We have had some measures which popularity sometimes is not a measure of capacity. We have had to revise our standard of selection of mayors, councillors, MPs. We've just adopted a new principle out of experience. And out of abundance of caution, that we will not allow people who, by chance, just happen to use the popularity and ride on the popularity of the party, just to get an office without the responsibility to discharge that responsibility. So we have set a new standard, and it's an experience. We have the first time controlled all the 32 town councils throughout the country, and the level of delivery is different from city to city. And we have learned that we need to put certain standards that will allow for maturity, for responsibility to apply.
The survey was very clear that your appetite...
Please, don't ask me about this.
No. I'm not asking about the survey, but it was saying that your appetite as an MDC, as a party for change in Zimbabwe, have dissipated. What do you make of that? You know, they're saying that public confidence has eroded.
Let me tell you, the MDC and the people of Zimbabwe are together in a project, and we have a clear roadmap to achieve that project. In 2006, we set out to say we will act to put pressure on Mugabe to come to the negotiating table. We've done that. We will have a transitional government. We have set up that. We will have a new constitution. That's what we have just concluded. We will have free and fair elections. We will have a referendum and a free and fair election. So as far as the defined strategy of the MDC is going, we are on course. So for people to conclude that we no longer have the appetite when we are on course, how else can we define the path to that change? And I want to tell you one thing. The people of Zimbabwe are resilient. They want change. They have not withdrawn from that particular objective. And the MDC is the party for change.
Some observers are saying that... the tragic thing was that you took all your lieutenants into the inclusive government, and the party has now suffered because all the drivers of, you know, the movement are now consumed in doing government business instead of doing party business.
Well, what is government business? Government business is about delivery to the people. It's another arena of struggle. If you say that you should all confine yourself in throwing stones without necessarily taking those strategic positions to influence policy, to understand how government works, and to help the people deliver on their needs, then I don't know what kind of a leadership is that. I did not take everyone into government. There are people who are out there who have not been part of government. And I want to say that for the MDC, it has been a very good learning experience, which will find very handy in the future. And also the fact that people must not just conclude that to expect the MDC to be the only instrument of struggle. There is the civic society. There are all these people who want change. And all we need is a strong alliance to continue to push that agenda.
So do you think perhaps that people expect too much from you, that you have too much on your plate?
There is even no distinction. In fact, the expectation was that MDC was going to create jobs in a coalition. MDC was going to do one, two, three things. And you know the limitation of a coalition. There is no consensus on policy. Sometimes there's policy discord. Sometimes there is a sabotage of things. But let's measure those things that the coalition government has achieved in terms of stabilizing the economy, in terms of health delivery, in terms of education, in terms of water, and in terms of general peace in the country. Yes, we may not have delivered jobs because jobs are not created like they are manna from heaven. Jobs are dependent on what investment you put in place and what measures you put in place to attract foreign direct investment. So those are measures that will need even further debate.
We received, you know, complaints or even reports from, you know, such publications as the Daily News saying that the Prime Minister himself seems to be less and less accessible to the local media. And, you know, we have also been trying to get hold of you, but it seems ever since you became Prime Minister, it's been difficult to get hold of.
But you're talking to me. How do you complain that I'm actually excluding you from the interview?
But Prime Minister, can I answer that question? Because yes. This is something that is also of concern to some of us. Yes, you're talking to me right now, but since you became Prime Minister 3 or 4 years ago, this is the first time that I've actually had a chance to interview you.
No. Let's be honest.
The second time
you were studying, and so therefore you were not accessible. At home, I have a monthly press briefing. Studio 7 are there at all those monthly briefings.
But that is not the same, Prime Minister. That is not the same. Because you even hear the Daily News saying that, complaining about this lack of access. All journalists are complaining about this. Because you've complained that ZBC does not cover you, for example.
No.
And yet here is a media that is an independent media that is willing to give you space. But we are not getting that space. That's basically what people are complaining about.
I don't know. I've never refused anyone any interview, and that's the truth. I'm very accessible. If there are any gatekeepers who prevent me from accessing the media, I'm hearing it for the first time. I think that to a large extent, I'm out there, to the field with the people, the media is there. And justifiably, I had a reason to raise about public media, because that's the truth, that I'm Prime Minister for the country for 3.5 years. I've never been appeared on the ZBC. That's the truth. So these matters, as far as access, Violet, I think what we need is to follow up and have proper arrangements. But I can tell you, and I want to assure you, that I'm very accessible. Luke, my spokesman, has done everything to make sure that we have monthly briefings and weekly briefings for ministers. If the ministers don't attend, it's not the Prime Minister to blame.
With all due respect, Prime Minister, yes, we understand that you hold these monthly press briefings, but it's not enough, especially as they can be seen as being stage managed. There are very little one-to-one interviews with you. And this is what many journalists are complaining about.
Well, if they are complaining about, well, let me go and investigate. I'll definitely not prevent anyone from having access to it, deliberately. That I can voice safe, that I'm the most accessible person, and that you know.
Moving on.
Who'd deal with that?
And then just still on the issue of access, it's not just people in the media who have been complaining about this. An email we received was that this increasingly reclusive behavior by the Prime Minister does not make him a man of the people, and he needs to be seen more regularly, you know, and speaking about the injustices that so badly afflict the nation and the communities. Do you think this is fair?
I can understand the angle. Mm-hmm. I'm not the spokesman. I am not a Prime Minister who speaks every day is a megaphone. I have spokespersons, I have ministers, and of course, where matters affect the national interest and abuse of the people, I will speak.
I guess some people, especially those who are affected expect more? Like, for example, I was just talking to one of the family members of the group of 29 people from Glenview who are still in custody. And she was saying that, you know, her daughter is still in custody, and yet they don't hear anything from the Prime Minister these injustices.
No. You can't be talking about that. You take measures. The group of 29 is an issue that we are grappling with as a party. The party has spoken. The party is doing the welfare interventions. The invidious position we face is that this is not a political detention. Although we know there are political motives, it's a criminal. And when you go to a criminal court, the abuse of the criminal justice system becomes even more evident. That's why we want to amend the Criminal Code and Evidence Act, which prevents, and we didn't even know at some stage that there is actually a rule which says that the police, if something happens to the police, it will not even allow any bail application. That's why the matter is before the Supreme Court. So we are doing everything. We know the plight of these 29, and unfortunately we are trapped in this legal process that we need to address. But yes, we do understand. We are intervening as a party. We are responsible for the welfare of the families. But we are trapped with this legal hindrance hurdle that we need to overcome.
Don't you think you will go to another GNU? And if so, where do you stand on this?
Well, there's no reason for having another GNU. There is no reason whatsoever. If an election is conducted in a free and fair election, it should produce a legitimate government that should take the country forward, whether it is MDC or ZANU-PF. It's conducted in a free and fair manner. There should be one clear winner who should be able to address the destiny of the country, address the vision of the country, address the needs of the country in the future. And there's so much that needs to be done. So I don't foresee a situation where we have another GNU for us.
Right, and we did talk briefly about the issue of policies, but how do you respond to people who say we don't hear any clear expressed policies from the MDC beyond their mantra of democratic change and change for better? And that, you hear ZANU-PF's clear on, you know, some of these issues like land and indigenization policies, but the MDC is not. How do you respond to this?
The problem is that how do you form a party which is 13 years, 14 years? Without a vision, without a policy? You think it's just a matter of being anti-Mugabe? No. People must go to our documentation and must be able to distinguish which party policy the party is pursuing. We are not hearing. What does it mean? We are not hearing. An individual stands up. I was in Japan the other day, and a girl stood up and said, "We are not hearing about your land policy." I said, "Have you looked at the policies of the MDC? They are there. You decide yourself to say there is no policy on land. But I can articulate those policies clearly because I know those policies are there."
But how how would you tell that to, a family in the rural areas who have no access to reading the policy documents online?
So, you know, I can understand that. But also it means that we go out to the people, explain our land policy to the people, explain what the party stands for, everything. It's only those people who want to come, and we come and tell them that this is the policy of the MDC in the offices. There is actually a website for MDC policies. And when we go out to the rural areas, we explain our policies clearly. That's why people have been with us for all these years.
Can you explain your policy on land, for example?
We believe that land must be to the people and not to politicians. Land must be to the people who need land. We believe that land is a finite resource and it must be used productively. And in order to do that, you need to entitle the land so that people can invest in the land. All that is there.
And on indigenization?
Indigenization is a policy of ZANU-PF. It's not an MDC policy. But we believe in broad-based empowerment. We don't believe in individuals, kasukuweres, accessing all the resources of the country for themselves and for their party. We believe there is a basis for a broad-based empowerment policy for Zimbabwe, whether it is in business, whether it is in education, whether it is on land. We believe in a broad-based thing. It is ZANU-PF which is pursuing the selfish, elitist, predatory elitist positions that are not in the best interest of the broad mass of Zimbabwe.
So how does the MDC plan to address these very real issues?
They are not real issues unless they are raised by ZANU-PF. Yeah? They become real issues when they are abused by ZANU-PF for partisan political objectives and not for the national interest. If we wanted to have a proper empowerment policy, we should go to Parliament, table a green paper, people discuss it, and then it is implemented by government. But if it becomes a partisan political objective of a few who just want to benefit as if it's not the best way to go. So you cannot ask me to articulate a ZANU-PF policy. I can only articulate what I believe is the best way to empower people in a broad way and not just an elite group.
And what's the MDC's position on gay rights?
Look, the question of gay marriage is a ZANU-PF propaganda. It has nothing to do with the MDC. We have said that the question of sexual orientation has nothing to do with everybody. Sexual orientation is for the individual behind their closed doors. It has nothing to do with everyone. And if you are talking about human rights, it then becomes an infringement on somebody's private life, and that's not upholding human rights.
But rights activists say this final draft, which your party has endorsed, does not actually protect their rights.
No. It does. It says freedom from sexual orientation is an individual right. So how else could you want it to be captured?
And before we go, Mr. Changirai, your wedding is in a few days, so I'd like to take this time to congratulate you. Makorokoto.
Thank you.
Yes.
I thought that is what you should have started with.
I thought, let's end on a good note. So, what have you learned reflecting, on the journey you have traveled in your personal life? What are some of the things you would want to share with your supporters in you being able to, select a partner for yourself?
No. These are personal matters. But I just want to say, look, I've had the misfortune of losing a wife in very sad circumstances. And after 3 years, I found somebody I want to marry and I'm in love with and I'm happy with. And I'm moving on that basis. I'm not the first man to go through that experience. And that's what I'm looking forward to, a happy, happy marriage again.
Right. And what can you say to your supporters who are disappointed that you married the daughter of a man who is accused of brutalizing your supporters in Chitungwiza?
I cannot answer for Mama Chega's actions. And let me tell you one thing. When you are going out to look for a woman, you don't ask for a political card. Or you don't ask for their parents. Look at the woman and say, I love this woman. Yeah? You don't answer. The children cannot be answerable for their parents' sins.
I understand some of your supporters, especially from Chitungwiza, actually approached the party to talk about their concerns on this matter. And that is why I'm asking for your reaction.
Let me tell you one thing. I don't answer for Mr. Macheka Smith's demeanor. I don't answer for whatever he has done. It's not justified. If the people are not happy with it, they should judge Mr. Macheka and not me. I have met my future wife in totally different circumstances, and I'm happy with her. How she's going to deal with the people of Chitungwiza who are not happy with their father, that's a different issue. But as far as I'm concerned, we have people from different political affiliations who have married across the political divide. And I can tell the Speaker of the House is married to, his wife is the daughter of ZANU-PF Nyoni. So, and we can have so many of these things. These are personal matters, and I'm not accountable. Of course, I'm sensitive to my supporters' concerns, but I cannot stand and start defending something I don't know about. All I know is that I've met a woman, I love her, and I'm moving forward. If people want to make a judgment on my leadership on that basis, then we certainly cannot have that is the yardstick of measuring my leadership on that.
You have an option of, answering this question because it is your personal life, as you said. But I have a duty to ask you, as you're a public figure, given a chance, to do this again or a second chance, are there things you would do differently in terms of identifying a partner, and what would you avoid?
It doesn't arise. I found a partner. The fact that what mistakes I've done, whatever, life is about experience. Life is If you were to repeat it, that is, if it's even a hypothetical question, if you were to relive your life, there are certain things that you would say, I made a mistake here, I made a mistake here, and you would correct. But unfortunately, in life, you don't repeat life.
Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, thank you for taking time to talk to Voice of America Studio 7.
All right, welcome.